in AI and Web3, that's where the best coders are at. That's where the people on the cutting edge are. That's where the dev talent in both spaces are insane. So they're the people helping build out this security infrastructure for the future, and that will get built out. Otherwise, the companies will fail.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how generative AI and Web 3.0 are revolutionizing the digital landscape. Now, in the ever-evolving realm of internet and technology, Web 3.0 is taking center stage. This paradigm shift envisages a decentralized online ecosystem driven by blockchain technology. In this episode, we're going to delve into the symbiotic relationship between generative AI and Web 3.0 and explore the implications, the applications, and the possibilities that lie ahead, as far as we can, a focus on pharma towards the end. My guest today is Eric McHugh, who is an entrepreneur with many years' experience in Web 3.0, AI, and blockchain. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to being here.
It's so exciting to have you, because Web 3.0 keeps coming up constantly, and I'm really curious to hear everything that you have to say. Could you tell us, before we get into everything, a little bit about your background and how you ended up in this space?
Sure, I'm happy to. Nice to meet everyone. My name is Eric. I'm 30 years old. I'm blessed to be living in beautiful Southern California right now. My main hobbies are chess, Muay Thai, reading, and meditation. Just got back from a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat in my area. It was beautiful, transformative. I recommend everyone check it out. In terms of schooling, I went to the University of California, Irvine. At that time, I interned in Barcelona, Spain as a project manager, and in Washington, D.C. on the Hill as a government affairs consultant. Right after college, my first job was at Snap Inc. And there are two main, and that was helping craft their ad algorithm. The two main reasons I chose that position was, first off, the location was right on Venice Beach. and their company structure is they didn't have one big campus. They bought a bunch of different houses. So you got to work with a bunch of different people, different teams on different projects, which I thought was cool. It's a great learning experience to just see how different people work.
Yeah.
And the second reason I chose that was it was right before their IPO. So I wanted to see what it was like going through that as a company.
Yeah.
And after that ended, I started another 9-to-5 job as a bankruptcy consultant for Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. So if a company goes bankrupt, they have a lot of debt they have to move around. The consultants work with the lawyers and the bankruptcy court to make sure everyone gets paid properly. And so that's where we came in. So and that leads into my entrepreneurship journey. At that point in time was when I was really researching cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And that didn't really align with the ethos of the bankruptcy consultant. And what I mean by that is, during a bankruptcy, there are four levels of creditors, like tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four. Mm-hmm. Tier one gets paid before tier two and three and then four.
Yeah.
The normal people are on tier four. And as a consultant, you're billing out to the client. So in a way, your hours are kind of taking away from the pool that should go to like the mom and pops of the world. Mm. So that didn't really align well with the Bitcoin ethos. So I quit that job. I knew I was going to work in cryptocurrency. So I'm like, okay, how do I do this? I didn't really have a plan, but I started going to cryptocurrency meetups in my local area.
Yeah.
I met the original ShopX team there. We spun off another SaaS platform startup on the side. It was called CartRev. That replaced affiliate codes for Shopify brands, which is important because we learned a lot during that experience and dumped that back into ShopX.
Yeah.
So what ShopX is I want you to think of the Google or Apple Web3. Long term, we're going to be a suite of products for an e-commerce brand to download an app, interact within the app very easily, and earn Web3 benefits depending on which product they use and what their business need is. Right now, we have two products live. The first is ReserveX. That's our NFT-powered loyalty program. So if you're a brand on Shopify or WooCommerce, you can download an app. And then directly within the app, you can launch a NFT collection and then add e-commerce benefits to that NFT collection for your customers. So for example, our biggest client right now is probably Fox Studios' new show, Capopolis. If you own the Crab Chicken NFT, you get a vote on what happens in the show. You get exclusive access to merch. You get exclusive content. So it's a new way to create a relationship between the show and the customer.
Yeah.
And that leads to...
And
that would lead into our second product, which is SquadX. So that's the first ever blockchain-based ambassador program. So just like Twitter pays, or now X pays its creators from their ad revenue, we pay our community for helping our ecosystem grow from ReserveX revenue. So when a brand sells a pass, they have control of 95% of the funds. ShopX earns our revenue from that 5%. And half of that, so 2.5%, we share with our community. And the logic behind this is, first off, it's better to give than receive. And so as ShopX gets more and more brands, the brands get more and more sales, the brands are happy, ShopX is happy, our community is getting paid more and more Ethereum, so they're happy. They're posting about ShopX, driving more positive attention around the brand, thus drawing in more and more e-commerce brands, creating a nice upward spiral for everyone. So it's a fun little system we got going. Long term, we're going to build out a solution where we attach a, and I think this is kind of how it can relate back to pharmaceuticals. Long term, we're going to build out a product called SourceX. And what that does is attaches an ENFT to each individual product SKU of a brand. So like, let's say Nike, they have a million product SKUs. They attach an ENFT to each individual product. And then they can track the history of their product throughout its whole lifetime. So like, the Nike could see like, okay, these glasses sold once for this amount, twice for this amount, third time for this amount. And then on the flip side, the customer can trace it so it's authentically from Nike. So they're like, okay, I'm buying these glasses. Are they real Nike glasses? Let me check the blockchain. Okay, they actually came from the Nike factory, thus ensuring authenticity. So that's project one. That's the ShopX Web3 e-commerce. And there are plenty of ways we can tell us back in the pharmaceuticals now that I'm actually talking about it. But the second project...
Actually, it's got a lot of applications in pharma because you've got like, you know, so much, 5% of drugs are counterfeit in pharmacies. Oh, yeah. So counterfeit drug tracking and supply chain.
Yes, yeah, so, and I'm not sure if your listeners know this, but the supply chain on the back end is a complete, it's a mess in terms of barcoding. That system's kind of out of date, meaning like barcodes are being reused at a pretty alarming rate if you look into the issues or if you actually look into it. So for example, I could scan my, like, this notebook, not a video, but you can scan this notebook and then a computer screen can pop up. So because they're reusing that. But yeah, the second project I'm involved in, and in terms of work, I just follow my genuine intellectual curiosity and wherever it leads me, it leads me. So this led me to the second project, which is dating AI. I met the CEO on a CryptoCon podcast tour earlier in the year. We stayed in touch and all of a sudden this dating company followed me. I thought it was funny, so we started working on it. So what that is, its overall goal is to match a billion happy couples, because I personally believe human relationships are very important for a happy life. And the core of that for a lot of people is a nuclear family. So if we can match people based on authentic interests, where they have a chance to be happy with someone they actually vibe with, I think I count that as a win. So what dating AI, it's the first ever AI powered matchmaker. So imagine this, it's going live February 14th around Valentine's Day, because that's a good time. But you would sign up for the app. You would link your social media accounts, like your Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, YouTube, all that good stuff. And then it auto-generates a profile for you based on your digital footprint. And then it'll match you with people based on their digital footprint. So like, for example, me, I'm very active. I have a 4-year degree. I have two brothers. It could give me 3 matches, like Ashley, Kim, Jane. And then it'll give me a brief description on Ashley, Kim, or Jane. And I can be like, okay, Jane catches my fancy. Can you tell me more about Jane? Oh, she has a 4-year engineering degree from the University of California, Irvine. You're the oldest of 3 siblings. She's the youngest, so you may match there. Oh, 25% of your Spotify 25% of your Spotify playlist is R&B, just like Jane. Oh, Jane also tags herself at a bunch of national parks. she has a close friend group. I'm like, oh, tell me more about Jane. I would like to meet her. And then you can get really granular there. So the secret behind that is really just pattern recognition and machine learning, which, again, tying back to pharmaceuticals, now that we're talking about, like, I know pharmaceuticals is probably a data-driven industry. So, like, if you can mass scan, like millions of patients, find common denominators between them, and then see if the drug would actually be able to help them based on other use cases. And then from there you can leverage AI to sort them out. And then another leverage for AI is to leverage that out, use that to write copy, use it to reach out to them on a personal note, and then just kind of run with there. And then it can track all that data, making itself smarter.
Well, you've got very diverse areas that you're working in. That's interesting. Yeah. Maybe we'll bring it back to the beginning now and really start with Web 3.0. So could you really give like a brief explanation to the listeners of what Web 3.0 actually is?
Sure, I'm happy to. And I think to give that explanation, we need to go back to what Web 1 is. Mm-hmm. So in Web 1, I just like to classify it as reading only. So if we were in Web 1, your listeners could just read content online. It's like, oh, the content's up, let's read it.
Yeah.
Web 2 is we can read and we can write content. So I want you to think of Instagram, social media like Facebook. So like I can write the content, I can like post a photo. You can read that content because you're viewing my photo and you can interact with that.
Yeah.
The only issue is neither of us own the content. So like on Instagram, obviously Instagram owns the content. They make the money. They can delete us whenever they want. So in Web 2, there's no ownership. Yeah. In Web 3, there's read, write, and own. So in Web 3, I could read some, like I could write my own content, like in the form of NFT. You can see my NFT and then you can buy that NFT, but whoever owns that NFT owns NFT. Like it's not Instagram owning their NFT, it's you as a person owning the NFT.
That's probably the next thing to explain. So can you explain a non-fungible token?
Yes, I just think of it as programmable data. So so a non-fungible token is generally a piece of information that is based on the Ethereum blockchain. So for example, I could launch a 500 NFT collection. Those 500 NFT collection, like Eric's 500 NFT collection, each individual non-fungible token in that set, so like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, is its own piece of digital scarcity on the internet. And how I want to leverage that digital scarcity is up to me. So I specialize in e-commerce, so I can add e-commerce benefits to each piece of non-fungible token, but you can do what you want with that non-fungible token. So it's just it's digital scarcity on the internet.
Interesting. So what do you think, I mean, I think most people listening to this have, because we've done so many episodes on Gen AI, understand that. How do you think generative AI can revolutionize the Web 3.0 landscape? What are the biggest ways you think it's going to have an impact?
Yeah, so in terms of generative AI, I view all technology as neutral. So, and however you want to spin it, you totally can. So I know some people are pretty doom and gloom about Gen AI, like thinking like Terminator vibes, but I don't view it that case. I think it's going to be a tool for more people to unleash their creativity on the world. So for example, let's say I were to start a brand. I don't have the graphic design skills nor the copywriting skills, or maybe the copywriting skills to do it myself. So leveraging Gen AI, I can ideate something in my brain and I can transition that into the physical world easier, meaning I can just start spinning out content, logos, copywriting, leveraging email lists, creating automations, all through the power of Gen AI. So I think it's going to leverage the AI, the Web3 space. So for example, I know plenty of NFT creators who are using Gen AI to create their collections, which is a cool thing to do.
Yeah. And then what about the biggest opportunities for companies with this relationship with the Gen AI combined with the Web 3.0?
Yeah, so the biggest opportunity for companies in both spaces is, A, they're really new spaces. Like Web3 is just getting started. Gen AI is super new. So there are still plenty of problems that need to be solved. I think as a company, if you want to be successful, you should do two things. You should build something that doesn't harm people, and you should build something that doesn't take away from people. So with both spaces being new, like you can find a problem. Like for example, dating it's an AI company that helps match people based on genuine like in background interests. That's a problem that we view needs to be solved. So with Gen AI, it's new, it can help humanity in lots of ways, and it's up to the people to find ways that they think can help humanity. And the thing is, they can't really copy people if you're running a company, because it has to be something you're passionate about. It has to be something you understand. So be authentic, be like, okay, these are my gifts. This is how I can help humans going forward. And then you can use, you can leverage generative AI to do that. Going back to the concept, okay, you have an idea, now you can make that idea into reality. And if it works, it works. It doesn't, it doesn't.
What about the biggest benefits of that combination then?
So let's see. I think they work very powerfully together in the sense that with generative AI, I think the biggest, I think one of the big benefits is just really just scales up the individual, meaning like me as a person, like if I were using Gen AI, I could create 1 million pictures. I could be like, hey, Gen AI, whatever chatbot your name is, create 1 million pictures. No, I don't like these. Make them more purple, make them more royal, make them make them nicer, make them happier, make them friendly. And I can scale up my content creation that way.
Yeah.
But with that scaling of content creation and the scaling of like chatbots and all that stuff, it creates a bot problem, meaning like in the future, I could see people, and this is happening now in the background, like AI-based influence, for example, like a lot of influencers on Instagram who are selling products, like they're more of content funnels, but they're not even real. They're all just generative-based.
Digital influencers. Yeah.
So now with the scarcity aspect of NFTs, if you wanted to combine that, like you could throw on an NFT badge to each individual person to ensure they're a real person. So that's that's the easiest way I could see those two combining. So they play off each other.
Yeah. And what about the challenges of this combination? Are there any things that you see as particularly challenging?
I'd say the biggest area for opportunity in cryptocurrency is definitely user interface. Meaning for people to actually want to use the product or services in both Gen AI and crypto, it's still kind of janky on the back end. It has to be easy. It has to be fun for people. And the plus side is, as both are new spaces, meaning the big players haven't got in yet. So once the big players, like for example, like the Nikes, Sephora's, they all take advantage of this technology, they have the money, they have the resources, and now they have the incentive to make it easier and simple to use for the rest of us. So right now it's just mainly UI issues. On the back end, everything seems to be working fine.
What about privacy and security?
That is an interesting topic because, yeah, I would say in terms of generative AI, the privacy and security is very important. But a lot of times, I know a lot of companies, they play off the security matters of like, they're only asking for data that you've already given to different social media platforms. So whatever privacy and security measures they have in place, you're just playing off of that. But yeah, no, in the long run, what AI is going to be great at is pattern recognition from massive sets of data. Yeah. So that creates a large honeypot for an attacker. If they want to find data, like how do I find this? I could just attack an AI company. They probably have tons of it. Yeah. And so I think going forward, there's going to be a huge push. Because right now, I think we're in the building phase, like the move fast, break things phase, meaning like, people are making different AI companies, they're making different web3 companies for whatever purpose. But as it solidifies, that's when the security experts come in and they make that system extremely robust.
Yeah.
The good thing is, and it's no shock that companies are being hacked every day. Like for example, your banks, your credit cards, like they're getting hacked every day. But now I think the right people are in place to help build out the security systems. I mean, like for example, the security specialists at like your local bank or whatever company that just got hacked, they're usually older. They're just like out of the game. Whereas in AI and Web3, that's where the best coders are at. That's where the people on the cutting edge are. That's where the dev talent in both spaces are insane. So they're the people helping build out this security infrastructure for the future. And that will get built out. Otherwise, the companies will fail.
Yeah. And what about things like in terms of challenges, the quality of Gen AI output? Because, I mean, it is getting better, but it can sometimes be repetitive. Yeah, see that?
No, that's 100% better. And I remember when Gen AI first came out, you'd ask it produce a picture, it would just be complete. It'd be like nonsense. And it is getting better. And again,
it is getting better, yeah.
This is just a time thing. It'll get better and better, smarter and smarter. More people, more resources will get dumped into it, and eventually you'll be able to produce near picture perfect pictures of whatever you want. And of course, you can always optimize. So the quality's not there yet.
What about IP, and copyright kind of issues?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. And let's talk about that. Like, let's think about the movies or for example, I think some article or like New York Times or some major magazine is suing ChatAI. So that's where the legal system, I'm not legal, so not legal advice in any particular way, but I think that's where the laws are outdated and they have to catch up to the times. So for example, the laws for movies and copyright laws and all that stuff are written a while ago before the rise of Gen AI.
Yeah.
And either those get updated or Gen AI disappears. And I don't think Gen AI is going to disappear. So they really have to revamp their system on that part.
Yeah, I think in regulations in general are just always a little bit behind what's going on with technology.
And honestly, I think that's going to be really important going forward because of think about how easy it is to mass produce content. Like, for example, let's say you, Andrea, you have an Instagram profile or whatever, your website. Eventually, I'll be able to spit in your Instagram and say, hey, create me 50 profiles based on this image and make it look similar. And then I can have 50 Instagram accounts based on you. And then on the background, I can set up creating video content based on your video content. So yeah, that could be an issue going forward, but that'll get solved. Yeah. And I think NFTs will help with that, like the verifying you're a real person.
It reminds me of Grimes and the musicians and how, AI can basically generate new songs in the style of a particular musician. I remember reading somewhere that Grimes said that she's fine with anyone copying her style as long as she gets a cut of whatever's made from it. So it's interesting.
Well, in the Grimes case, I would say if they're copying Grimes's music, I think that's where she should get a copy. But if it's just her style, I don't think one person owns the style. But there's something I will say about generative AI and creating content. Mm-hmm. This might be a little bit woo, but I view the world in frequency and vibrations. Mm-hmm. So when someone writes something, you can tell when someone puts their heart and soul of it, and you can tell when someone just copies someone. That's why the Mona Lisa is so much more powerful than a copy of the Mona Lisa. So in terms of generative AI, I think the thought, the love, and everything that goes into the song, the hard work, I think people can tell when an artist put their heart and soul in the song, and I think that will resonate more with people. And I could be wrong, but I don't foresee generative AI being able to copy that in the future.
It's an interesting topic. I remember there was a Gen AI came out in art, and I personally couldn't tell the difference between the real artist and the Gen AI, but I put it on LinkedIn and I got more comments on that post than I've ever got in my life before. Both, some people being really pro and some people being really against. It's quite divisive in terms of, how people view it, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It's going to play out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no stopping that.
And what about the risks? Can you think of any risks with Gen AI and Web 3.0?
In terms of Web 3.0, I don't think there's too much. The biggest risk the biggest risk in Web 3.0 is the user itself. So one of the ethos in but one of the ethos is crypto is you own your coin, not your keys, not your coin. So let's say in Web 2, I lose access to password, I lose my banking password. I'm like, hey Chase, can you log me back in? But in Web 3, I lose my Bitcoin. The Bitcoin's completely gone. The ownership, the power, and the responsibility lies on me. So I don't think that's exactly scalable right now. I mean, I don't want to send my mom to do that. But the good news is that's going to be fixed in the back end. For example, when Web 3 takes, for Web 3 to be successful, my mom has to be able to use Web 3 and take our phone, scan, tap, tap, tap. In the back end, her bank account has to transfer her savings account into a stablecoin, pay the vendor, the vendor's stablecoin transfers to US dollar, whatever currency they're in, and then they get paid that way. And that needs to happen without anyone knowing it's happening. And that's what's going to be built out right now. But presently, it's I would say the biggest risk is the user itself just not knowing how to interact with technology, which is a learning curve that needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
And the second biggest risk will lead into the AI risk is I think it's prime for phishing scams. So for example, ShopXWorks is a bunch of Web 2 e-commerce brands. A lot of times, over 50% of their users are brand new to crypto. if I were a hack, not even a hacker, because you can't exactly hack it in the sense you can't like go on the computer and like hack the computer and take it. Mm-hmm. But what I could do as a hacker is like, hey, your account's not working. Give me your password type of stuff. And then once I have your password, I could take your money and then you can't get it back. So like if ShopX is working with a bunch of brands who are people are new to crypto and I were a hacker, I would view that as somewhat of a honeypot opportunity. So then that lies on us and the brand to help educate the people properly on how to use it.
Fall for the phishing. Yeah.
And again, that leads to the risk of generative AI, because for the more data the AI machine has, the smarter and better it gets. But then again, that creates another honeypot for malicious actors. But that gets solved. But then that creates incentive for people to actually come in and solve that issue of hackers, which will then make the system more robust. So it kind of works itself out, but still has to be done.
Is there a way, you know, because with all the Gen AI, you know, there's been so many, speaking of, you know, scams, scams involving Gen AI, you know, there's that one where they mimic the voice, they use Gen AI to mimic someone's voice and they call the parents and say, I've been kidnapped, I need a ransom, can you pay it? And I think about 8, maybe 9 or 10 months ago, when I looked, about 36,000 people had been scammed by that one. And I keep thinking, I mean, I always say to people, you know, you need kind of a code word in your family, because I can't, you know, I think that eventually we'll have some kind of blockchain solution where we've got authentication of our image and our voice and our everything. But how long do you foresee before we get to that stage that we can have that digital authentication?
So companies like ShopX are working on that right now, and I would say we're 2 to 3 years out.
Wow,
But if the need comes up quicker, because right now it's more of a resources thing. Yeah. As soon as there's a really big need, a really big push, it really is just like a put capital in and the solution will be built out. So maybe like, and before, I think the solution will be built out in 1 to 2 years, but for it to be actually fully usable and like no one knows that it's, because when that solution is built out, it's going to be kind of janky. People aren't going to use it. Like, that's so hard. But for I would say 4 years, it's when it's, the solution is fully built out, when it's baked in and people don't even know they're using it. So I would say that's 4 years out.
That's amazing. That's really cool. So when that kind of thing is done, when you've built that kind of solution, that means that when these Gen AI scams come up, you won't be fooled, because it'll say, beep. But it's not so-and-so. Is there a way you can do that? So it'll basically identify whether it's a real person or a fake person?
Yeah, so there are ways to do it. So on the back end, and again, we're just playing with ideas here. You can attach an ENFT. It's called a soul token. So what that NFT is, it attaches to me, you, or whoever as some form of license. So if a call is coming from there, you can confirm that that's the person. That's one way to do it. In terms of ENS, there's like an... helping with this like scammy websites, you know, like there's a bunch of websites like Google, like fake Google websites. On the blockchain, there's a way to get an ENS domain. So for example, I own ericmchugh.eth. That's another way to identify who I am. So there are cool ways around that.
That'll be really interesting when I see how that happens. Now, I did take a look at the ShopX website and I saw that you were using this to boost brand loyalty with customers and with customer ownership. And a lot more. Could you tell me some of the case studies of things that you are doing with your customers and clients and what the results were?
Yeah, sure. In terms of the case study example, I like to give 3 examples, 1 enterprise, 1 mid-level, and 1 mom and pop shop, just because I think that covers most.
Yeah.
I would say our most successful case study is with Fox Studios' new show, Cropopolis. So if you watch Rick and Morty, it's from the same creator. It's actually pretty fun. I would give it a watch. So what they did is they launched their NFT collections, the Crab Chickens, prior to the release of the show. Mm-hmm. They raised money, which is great. I think they raised a couple million, which is great, but they're Fox, so I guess they have tons of cash. But where the true value lies is they had a hardened fan base of people prior to the release of the show. So they had people excited before the release of the show, because again, the ownership aspect, you feel like you own a piece of the brand. Like, I own my Crab Chicken, I get a vote on stuff. My Crab Chicken may show up on the show. I get exclusive to merch. So you're hyped for the show. And I was telling everyone about the show. And then when it launched on Super Bowl Sunday, it was actually one of the most successful ratings-wise launches ever for a Fox TV show. And that's because they laid the groundwork before. So that's case study number one. I'd say case study number two is one of my favorites, and that's with a Mag Park. Mm-hmm. So they're a mid-sized brand in Los Angeles. What they do is they sell custom hats, like limited hat drops. And their biggest issue was they'd release a hat online, and then within half a second, bots would come in to swoop. And this is going to be a problem when they bots. So bots would come in and swoop their inventory in less than a second, then flip that inventory on the secondary market for like 10 times the profit. So the biggest issue
never even thought of that.
Oh yeah, no, it's a whole thing in the background of like hypeware. But the issue with that is the owner Mickey, he's a good guy type of thing. It's like his family business, like he's an LA man. He didn't get the profits, but also like his customer base, like they're like local LA kids who would wait outside for the hat. They're part of the brand, is like a family brand.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't even get the product because some random scalper would come in and resell everything, and they won't be able to afford it because they're like an 18-year-old kid who can't afford like a hat. Mm. So what he did is he launched a NFT collection. It was like a gold, silver, bronze style pass collection. So each different pass has different benefits. So now his most loyal customer base, they know whenever he releases a hat, they get first access. So in order to get to the hat's checkout, the website scans their wall to see if they have the right NFT to get to the checkout. So if I have the NFT that allows me to purchase hat A, I say, Simon, can you see if I have this NFT? Our technology scans that, and then I proceed to the brand's checkout. Then checkout works per usual. And if you were trying to buy the hat, you don't have the NFT, it says, sorry, you need this NFT to buy it. So that was very successful. It has 100% bot accuracy. So far, no bot has been able to get through. From our side, we've hired professional botters to try to break the system, and they said it was better than Nike. And he sold his first pass out in less than 24 hours. He earned himself 93.75 ETH, and each pass sold for 0.75 ETH. And at today's prices, that's like, what, 1,500? Mm-hmm. And considering the marketplace of like, they're usually like younger kids. So if you can get someone to drop $1,500 on a new technology hat because they want to support the brand, I think that's amazing. And over 50% of the users were completely brand new to crypto, helping move that needle forward. So now they have the pass, they get to vote on hats, they get to help him design. They have a community within Discord solely for the pass holders where they get alpha. And of course they get discounts and products and all that good stuff.
Wow. I mean, how could Farmer use that then? I'm just thinking aloud, because you probably may not be able to get patients as excited. Well, it depends on the drug though, doesn't it? So if you had a revolutionary new treatment for something that there wasn't a treatment for, like some kind of rare disease or something like that, you might be able to get a patient community on board.
It could be, so my initial thing for the pharma card is, and its core NFT is just programmable data. So if I have my, if Eric McHugh has all of his pharmaceutical data on one card, you as a brand, like, okay, he's had this many, and you can leverage AI to help with this. We go scan Eric. Eric's a perfect fit for this specific pharmaceutical drug. Let's add this drug to his NFT pass so only Eric can claim the product. So like in e-commerce, it's called token gating. So my NFT pass access unlocks new e-commerce products. So you could do that with pharmaceuticals, and it could also take the place of a pharmaceutical card, meaning like, this NFT pass can only unlock this product once. So like you can use that as a way to fulfill like prescriptions, I think. And then because I'm the one fulfilling that prescription, it's all in one place. So like the doctor, whomever, can be like, okay, Buster, you've already fulfilled your thing. No more for you. Or it's like, okay, this has been the exact date since you last fulfilled this. And again, it's all in one place for the technician. Yeah. And I've been at the hospital recently just because of some family issues, and I've noticed that like everything is done on the computer. I mean, like it's all handwritten notes, like because the teams are cycling, like different nurses, different doctors working on different patients. So like if everything is in one place that's verifiable for all the patient history, I think that could be pretty powerful. And then from the AI perspective, again, if all of it's in one place verifiable, that's a lot of data for the AI to like do its pattern recognition thing on the background. So it could be like, okay, for example, Eric has on his patient card, he said drug XYZ for this. Okay, well, all 100 other people who've had this, they developed this exact thing in the future. Maybe there's some correlation. maybe you want to check it out, and maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But again,
so for safety as well. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
it just got me thinking.
I think the biggest use case, I'd say one of the biggest use cases is the authentication factor, because I can only imagine that there's a bunch of counterfeit drugs.
Well, it was just making me think about when COVID was happening, when the pandemic was on, you know, there were a lot of people that thought, I don't know why, that hydrochloroquine might be a good prophylactic. Okay. And so then that drug, which was really critical for people with lupus and other conditions, became in shortage because people were stockpiling it as a prophylactic for COVID, when it obviously had no impact at all on COVID. But you could use something like this to make sure that the real patients that really needed it, it was saved for them, and they were the only ones that were able to get it at that time. That would be a really cool application.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what ReserveX does in the e-commerce world. I mean, like, okay, people want this hat that's coming out. It's a cool hat. And what they would normally do is they would try to stockpile it, like they did for the drug you just mentioned. So they're like, no, only this group of people can get it once, because they need that.
Yeah, exactly. Because I remember I knew someone who really needed it, and I was calling around everywhere. Just, it was crazy.
The motto behind ReserveX is relax, it's reserved. So for example, if you think like the iPhone, it's like, okay, I want the iPhone out of the pass. I don't have to wait in line for Black Friday. I don't have to deal with that whole hassle. It's like, oh, I know it's reserved for me. So I'm sure the same thing could apply for different pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, interesting. Food for thought. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. This has been fascinating, and I still need to think more about applications, but maybe we'll do another show at another point where we explore that further. But it's really got me thinking about lots of different areas. So fascinating. Thank you so much for your time. Today, we're going to be putting on in the show notes a lot of information about how to get in touch with Eric if you want to. But you can contact him at shopx.co and see more about what they're doing. It's not designed for pharma, but there probably are lots of interesting applications that this technology could be used for pharma.
Yeah, so my favorite thing about both Web3 and generative AI is they're just both really new technologies. So the use cases for all different industries, people are still inventing them. So I'm sure someone will come up with a very ingenious use case that helps a lot of people through pharmaceuticals, and I'm here to support that in any way we can.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you so much. It was a blast.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.